This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of High and Mighty is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter offer code MIGHTY at checkout to get an additional 10% off. An addition to what? An addition to the great savings you're already getting, because Squarespace is not expensive. It's $8 a month and you get a free domain. You've signed up for a year. I know when I was hiring a personal assistant slash, you know, like confidant, I looked at a lot of personal websites and personal resumes, and I'll tell you what, man, those websites that look good really got to step over the angelfire.com/Lord of the Sith or whatever. With Squarespace, you can get professionally designed sites with no skill level, no coding. It's easy to use, state-of-the-art technology, security, stability, all that stuff. It's only $8 a month, free domain if you sign up for a year. So start your free trial today. No credit card required. You could just be a creepo without credit. Squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code shows my offer code, which is MIGHTY, to get 10% off your first purchase. I almost just said the thing that's in parentheses. Just make sure to use the offer code MIGHTY and get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. What's up, shitheads? Welcome to another episode of High and Mighty. Today we're talking about poker and gambling in general. We haven't hit every single vice on this show yet, so we're getting to another one of mine. And to talk about that with me are friends and gamblers. I want to say degenerates, but that doesn't speak to you guys that much. I got Sean Clements and Dominic Durkas.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up? I've exhibited degenerate gambling behavior before.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I wouldn't say I am a degenerate gambler, because that feels too
right. This is the way you're talking about gambling. The way I talk about drinking, it's like,
okay,
oh yeah, I can go a couple of weeks without having a drink,
sure,
but then one night I will have half a bottle of vodka and take my shirt off at like mm-hmm. a
yes.
My
if I really indulge party. That habit, it gets dark.
I'm always under control.
We're well aware of that. Just so you guys know, Sean is standing in the corner of the room in a suit with a music stand with typed out notes about what he wants to talk about on this.
Yeah,
episode.
If you're going to give a speech at some point, that's, I mean, just let us know. And we can kind of
behind a bulletproof lectern. So when we're talking about gambling, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about casino?
What do we talk about when we talk about gambling?
That's good.
That's the title.
Have you guys
of your...
defined the term broadly for people yet? Like, have you gotten real general about just what is gambling?
What is gambling? I actually just, you guys are noticing this now. I have no idea how to host a podcast. So, what is gambling? I have just three notes, and it says, what is gambling? Dom and Sean. So when we say gambling, a lot of people, like, do you guys bet on sports?
I have bet on sports.
Yeah.
I
mean,
Sean's more... Yeah, mostly when I say gambling, I'm talking about poker or like...
table games at a
yeah,
casino.
Yeah, like roulette or blackjack is
right.
Pretty much... Those are the three things. Although I will play sports bets, but mostly like socially. Not really. I'm a total loser in sports bets.
I mean, everyone is.
Sure.
Like, yeah. We have a little bit of a gap, but we can't... Table games are not as accessible as a house poker game or
sure.
sports bets with online stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And do you bet sports online?
I don't do it online. At one point, I had access to a bookie out here, and I was placing bets on NBA games every day. It was a bad idea. I think like the first day I won, I was like, I'm good at this. But that there's so many of those games that what you don't realize until you start doing it is like teams just take games off,
right?
Like they just totally show, like a far superior team shows up and they just don't play
because they're like, we don't have to win this game.
No, they're
we
like
100 more to play, we'll sort it out at
yeah
the end.
They're like, we need to win like 48 of them, and like so like, and so
why
we don't...
win 60 if 48
yeah.
gets you into the playoffs?
Exactly. So that was happening.
Is that called like minimum dose response? That's like what it's called for like drugs and like the least amount of work you could do to maximize, like, whereas, like, it's like 1-to-1 reaction. Once it gets to be 1-to-0.9, you, like, stop off there.
Right.
Does that make, I don't think I
don't
made
know.
A lot of sense.
I don't know what you're saying quite.
Hold on, me neither. Let me
just
see if
the numbers got confusing
yeah,
for me.
No, I know. As I said it, I was like, what am I talking about?
Here's the sports betting I really love to do. Win totals for teams, like over under win to, like
for
there
season?
Was a yeah for the season. So for like NFL, I would place like whatever, like I bet on like the over under, like, you know, the Chiefs are going to win more than 8 games,
right,
and
right, right.
the Patriots are going to win more than 12 or whatever. And I would just place those over under bets. And I got really, really into that, because then the whole season you like want something to happen every week, and right. it's very fun.
And you don't have to like watch the game, like you don't have to watch the game and be like, please score another touchdown. You can watch the game and like,
yeah,
like,
no just point spread matters, yeah. nothing is just like, I just hope overall that there's not some devastating injury or
right,
something
right, exactly, yeah.
And that was really fun, and I've done much better with that.
If I get to Vegas over the summer before football season starts, I always lay a bet for the Giants to win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I put like 50 or 100 bucks down for like, you know, it's like 18 to 1 or something like that to try to.
I put a bet on when we were in Vegas, I put a bet on the Grizzlies to win the NBA championship. Just because you just see the odds and you're like, well, I'd put 100 bucks on
right,
that
right.
or something.
And it, you look at it like
it's
an investment.
It's not going to happen, but.
Yeah.
This is going to sound like a degenerate thing, real quick. I do look at like. If I go to Vegas on a Friday, I'm there all weekend. I'll put sports bets in on for Sunday games on Friday afternoon, and that counts as like an investment. It like takes $300 out of my hand that right. I can't gamble with for the
it's
weekend.
It's almost an escrow in your mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like turning to my wife and saying, "Here, either take this and in 2 days rip it up or hand me back more."
Yes, it's very cool that you at the moment that you put the money down for the bet, you don't think of it as gambling yet.
Yeah, it's
because
exactly,
the game hasn't happened.
It's just,
you haven't gambled that money. It's just the casino has it.
Hey, before the game starts, can I have that back? No, sir. That is not how that works.
So, do you like sitting in the sports book and watching games that you've bet on?
Yeah, sometimes. Did you? I just unplugged my microphone. Do you still have it?
Why'd
Chris?
You do that?
I didn't hear a difference.
Okay, cool.
We haven't been recording your voice at all.
I just did it really kind of for the first time this past weekend. I bet a bunch of football games on Sunday. And then I was realizing that everywhere I sat, I had the opposite bed of the people next to me. And it was making me fucking nuts.
That's upsetting.
That like every time something bad happened for me, people would be like, yeah! And I was like, I hate these people. It's really not fair. But
yeah, and it's a little different when it's money. And if you're at a bar on a Sunday and you have on a Giants jersey and there's like five guys wearing Bills jerseys and you're like, all right, fun rivalry. But the second, so, and then you can't cheer if you have $50 and the other person has $1,000. There's like that moment where you're like, oh, sorry, 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 sorry.
Yeah, and I was just sitting there with my new wife next to a bunch of like Bengals fans who were smoking cigarettes like in our space. We're sitting in these little like student desk chairs or whatever.
That's the thing. The sports book is a sad situation.
It was rough, and I was like,
golf,
I can't believe I'm subjecting her to this. And also that like I'm losing money.
Yeah, like
and we're just watching it happen.
Like the casino is to the sportsbook area as going to a racetrack is to the OTB. Like,
yeah, that's
it's like
right.
The people in the sportsbook who are watching sports or playing, if they're like, sometimes there's a table full of dudes who are just watching Sunday football and have some bets, and you can get some free drinks if you prove you have bets out or whatever. But I'd much rather go to a sports bar and watch a game once I have money on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a sad. When I play poker at Hollywood Park, and there's because they have the like all the racetrack betting there. Like, that's the saddest scene, is like dudes just watching horse races getting upset. Like, that
you started a sentence
with
when I play poker at Hollywood Park and ended with the other thing happening is very sad.
Yes, Hollywood Park in general is very depressing.
The most depressing place.
It's really only when I have to like drop my girlfriend off at the airport at like
name
one
drop.
On a Sunday, I'm like
at 7 a.m.
At 7 a.m. on a Sunday, I'm like, great, I'm going to drop her off and then go play.
She's not
gonna
be
and
back
spend
for
the
72
night here.
Hours. I have all the time in the world.
Yeah. So, I one time showed up at Hollywood Park. I had to drop. I dropped someone off. I won't say my wife again because
Rob
I don't want to get. And it was like whatever. Their flight was at like 5 a.m. and then I went to Hollywood Park and I had to wait like an hour and a half for there to be enough people for a poker game to start.
Oh.
There was nobody at the tables and I just like was watching TV in Hollywood Park for a while, and I was like, this is the grossest thing I've ever done.
All right, so this is a good segue. So from sports betting to poker. Now, I played poker like in high school and then in college because it was like around the time of Moneymaker was college. So we were all on like online poker and doing that shit. But you guys are like legit poker players. Like you play in we play in house games and you enter in tournaments, not in Las Vegas. You enter in Are they called Indian casinos in LA?
No, they're card rooms.
They're card rooms?
Yeah, because they don't have other... I mean, they have like a weird modified blackjack, like at the Commerce and the Bicycle. And
so they're not
there's
real,
like four or five.
It's mostly like a, just a poker house.
It's most of their business is poker. And then, but then Pai Gow, too. They have like all those like table games that I just am terrified
to There's no house at these casinos. Right. Like at Indian casinos or at Vegas, there's like... The house can bet against you and win.
Right.
But here, they're just taking a rake out of the pot. So they're basically taking a portion of every amount that gets bet that you're renting.
So that, that makes it the
table from
between,
them in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so just, that's why Commerce has like as many tables as they can cram in there because it's just like, and they're just trying to deal hands as fast
as
they can.
So like Blackjack's weird there because there's no dealer. Like a person represents the dealer. You know what I mean?
There's like a dealer button that moves around, or like there's a player that is like, but they don't, the money they're winning is the house they don't get.
Because
it's like a total loophole. It's like total bullshit that they can do blackjack.
Right. It's like, why not just throw a craps table in here? Like,
yes, at what point are we like actually just, it's a casino down there, but it's.
So for the people who maybe live out of California or live in California and don't frequent these kind of like film noir places we're discussing, but so you've said Commerce, you've said Hollywood Park, and did someone say Morongo too? Or did I make that
I've never been to Morongo.
No one said Morongo. I haven't been there. But I hear it's nice.
Oh yes, I don't want to be caught bad mouthing Morongo.
You've played at the Hustler Casino.
I've played
oh God!
I can list the casinos I've played at in Los Angeles, but it's going to be like five or six.
All right, that's
it's
fine.
It's the
Let's
Commerce,
go.
The Hollywood Park, the Bicycle Casino, the Hustler Casino. I went and played at Hawaiian Gardens, and there's one I'm forgetting, but maybe that might be it. So that's five.
So
and there's a couple more.
What's the scene like in these places?
It varies. I mean, Hawaiian Gardens is like. Probably the scariest one I play. Like, it's the most, like, because all these other card rooms, it's like, no one's like standing up and shit. Like, at Hawaiian Gardens, I saw a guy like stand up and like throw chips at another guy and was just like screaming at him. And then he sat back down and got to keep playing. And it's like, in all the other card rooms, like, that guy gets ejected. But Hawaiian Gardens is like a little shadier.
And where is that?
It's farther south on the 5, and then you get on the 605, and then it's in Hawaiian Gardens. They had a really good tournament that I played in. I never played in their cash game, or I played in one cash game after I busted out of a tournament, but it's never my destination.
You just go there if there happens to be a tournament. That
there's
you think.
A good tournament that they do, but I'm just never able to get down there for it. But when I was like single and just playing cards all the time, and like in between, like had a few weeks to just, I just played a bunch. I just bounced around and played all these different tournaments.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because some of them are very good values. But
I love it, Tom. You're like Rounders Sans Edge.
But I never, yeah. Yes, like, there's no edge to it.
And you're Rounders, but you're not getting a sketchy. If you don't know what Dom looks like, just Google him right now. Just imagine this dude being like in an Ed Norton type situation. When did you get into poker? When did you guys get into? Was poker your entrance into gambling?
Actually, so I played cards a lot in high school growing up, and the game that we played in my high school constantly was this game called Setback, or some people call it Pitch.
I've played Pitch.
It's almost like spades or whatever, but you only get dealt six cards and you're like bidding. But that was like a partner game that we would play, and you played buck a point, double negatives, because you can go into a negative score. So however many you won by, if the other team was in negatives, they had to pay, you know, double for every point they were negative.
Ah.
And we played that like all day, every day. I was on the tennis team in high school, and on every bus, like two and away match and back, we were just playing these partner games of Setback, and did well. Like that was like my
money.
That was like my pocket money in high school was like playing Setback. And then we also all went and saw Rounders when it came out, and then like we started playing poker too. We had played like some small poker games, but that was when we started playing like Texas Hold'em and really learning a little bit more about that. Yeah, pretty into it back then. And I'd always played cards. Like, my family just plays cards a
lot. Right, that's
what
I was going to ask next, because my mom is a big-time gambler. My mom and dad went to Atlantic City once or twice a month my whole childhood without us. And my grandpa went to Atlantic City even when he was a widower, and even when he would go by himself on the bus in like his 70s. Like I'm the third generation of someone who went to Atlantic City way too often while living in New York.
Yeah, my family didn't gamble at all. I mean, my parents were like, my dad went to Vegas once on like a business thing and like put $5 on a red or black or something, and then got like a poker chip and like brought it home to be like, this is the poker chip. Like he was, it's just like how silly it was that he like gambled and whatever. And then so I, there was just this poker. But I mean, that's like, they just never did.
Yeah, I came from a long line of gamblers, and then in high school we played, in junior high and high school we played AC Deucey, which was like our entry level scumbag. Like that's where you flip over to.
Sure.
Yeah. And then if you post, you double the pot, like that kind of awful garbage. We played that, and we played CeeLo, the dice game.
Right.
I still play that like every once in a while when we're all fucked up in New York. We like bust out CeeLo dice and play dollar rolls.
That's
and
cool.
So like I was primed for game. I'm primed for every vice. Like everything. Every time I find a vice, I'm like, I really like this one. So I refuse to try cocaine. I'm so
sure.
Which is okay if you're 33 years old and overweight.
John.
Come on, buddy.
It's a whole other door that's open to you.
Yeah, you know, I'm just not positive if that's the move I need to make right
now.
Dude,
close the door. We're doing cocaine right now, man.
All right, yo, let's say that for a whole nother episode.
All right, we're doing a coke episode. Promise me right now.
Hey, it's 5.5 hours long.
My parents didn't really gamble, but my grandfather was like in a weekly poker game for a lot of his life. And then my cousin actually became a professional poker player briefly, and he was like the black sheep of the family. And one cool thing is every Christmas he would give everyone a bunch of scratch-off tickets, like with whatever, like with a card. And then he would collect all the losers because they were a tax write-off.
Yeah, tax write-off. My brother had to do that when he won like $5,000 playing... what's the stupid New York lottery in a bar game? Quick draw. You know, where the ball like bounces around and like some only sketchy like New York bars have it. He won like 5 G's and he had to collect a bunch of freaking scratch offs to prove like I also lost a bunch of money this year.
Oh yeah.
My cousin was like went to Princeton and was like studied to be like a molecular biologist or something and then was just fucking living in Vegas and playing cards for a living, and his parents were so mad.
Of course.
And I was like, this is cool.
I have a cousin named Cousin Bruce who I never knew growing up, but he, same thing. I probably shouldn't even be name dropping him on this, but he went to like John Jay College to be a lawyer and then just became a poker player, like, and bartender instead.
That's cool.
See, I love it. We're romanticizing those stories from a parent's point of view. And maybe if your friend was doing that now, you'd be like, dude, just finish your degree or whatever. But
right.
But at the time, that's fucking cool.
Yes. No, I feel very glad that I like found that I like got into playing poker after I like had a job and was like busy, like just my life necessitated that I not spend all my time playing, or else I might have like mind fucked myself into being like, I'm gonna play, and it's just like miserable.
Right, because like you could arguably make a living playing poker.
Maybe.
But it would be like,
but you can also just be good. Even if you're good, you can just get unlucky and then just lose all your money, and it happens all the time.
Yeah, you would need like an insane bit of self-control to be a professional, right? Like you would have to
be like bankroll management. There's like these formulas for how much, what stakes you should be gambling based on how much money is in your total gambling bankroll. And people and like
I love conversations like this. Yeah.
Well, Dom got like, you never played poker before like 2010, right?
Yeah, well, I had played cards when I was like a kid, but like rummy and stuff like that. And I had watched, I remember watching poker on TV and thinking it was like cool, like the whole moneymaker thing.
Yeah.
And then there was like a month in New York where like someone had like a Texas Hold'em PlayStation game or something that came free with something, and so we like played on that. So I like knew how to play, but I never, when these guys, when I worked on Alan Gregory, which
we
Sean
had this job where we had so much downtime that we started playing poker tournaments in the room,
and
like
and there happened to be a bunch of poker players that
everybody who worked there basically
liked to play. It's why I started
like
being like, well, I want to play in these games, I'm gonna like start playing more, because it was just something that literally everyone in the office was doing, and I was like, I know how to play enough to sit down at a game and
right.
play.
And then
and I
it's
just
like,
started,
yeah, it's like, you don't want to just like, all right, well, I'm going to go to my desk and play flash games like Dom and I did in one of our
yeah, and be like a weird loner. Well, also the thing I realized as I played longer and like was like reading books about poker and stuff after, you know, as the job progressed, I like realized later on how good most of the people at that job are. Like everyone is a very solid player. And so I was like frustrated early on learning because it was like I was just losing every time I would go and play. I was like,
and you
I'm
just didn't realize you were playing against people. You're like, poker's hard. And you're like, oh, I happen to be playing against.
Well, I knew I was playing against good players, but it wasn't until I was like, you know, it wasn't until I was like, have played. I've actually played with more players now, and in the scheme of things, it was a lot of like, you know, very solid players comparatively. I could have, if I worked.
It's like learning to play basketball with like really, and then like going to play a pickup game, and you're like, oh, okay.
I just felt like in learning to hang with those guys, I learned how to play better than a lot of people that I wasn't even playing against because it was just the level of that game was higher.
Poker, like, and I can't believe you didn't get into poker earlier because based on like your personality and your skill sets, like poker's in your wheelhouse of like stoicism in combination with like probability and quick math and reading people, like, are three things that are in your strengths. And like the fact when you were like, once I started playing poker and I learned the rules and read the books, I'm like, this is the most Dirkest way. I've seen you get addicted to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, sambo, where you get into something and you just can like laser focus. I mean, you did it with comedy writing and stand-up and all this shit over the years, but I've seen you get like into a hobby and just like, I am going to master this. And poker,
well, especially if I feel like there's any kind of aptitude for it, I'm like oh, okay, cool. Like if I'm like really bad at something, then I just immediately get frustrated and stop paying it. And I'm like, that's stupid.
It was interesting to watch Dom, like, because he just got his ass kicked for like the first like 2 months that we played.
Yeah, if I and won, then I must have been winning, like hitting draws or something.
All of a sudden, he just like went in this like deep dive of studying it. And then the next thing I know, he's like making algorithms on his computer to optimize tournament strategy. And just, I was just like, oh, okay, now you know so much more about this than I, and I've been playing my whole life. And this dude who I like,
that sounds like Dom,
just
like
watch learn how to play is suddenly like winning tournaments every week. I was like, oh shit, okay. That's made it not fun anymore.
I've recently started playing poker with you guys. And
yeah, played in that game.
I play in the game with these aforementioned heavy hitters, and I'm truly terrible at poker.
I don't think you're as bad as you think you are.
I enjoy the social aspects. I know where I'm at. I know what I can do, and I could play. I just can't bring myself to play tight and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
So I just go like, this is a $200 night of drinking Perrier's.
Early in the night when you played, early in the night, you made some big bet on a river. You bet like $40 into $60 or something on a river where I don't even remember what the hand was really. And the other person folded, and I thought for sure you had whatever hand you were representing, and you showed a bluff, and I was like, oh, I wouldn't have guessed Gabrus was going to play like that. And then it's like the boredom makes sense where you just go like, well, I have to.
I could only play table games of poker when I was coming up with like all my friends, when everyone got into it. I could only play poker at houses if they had a TV on.
Yeah.
I could only play well if I could just sit out a hand and just like focus on something else, or else I get that's why I like to gamble. I don't like poker is a skill.
I like to roll dice.
I like to play craps. That's what I can have the most fun at a casino is playing craps.
Yeah, people who are like online pros, like low level online pros, I feel like it is what you're talking about, where it's pure discipline, where they just like only play the mathematically correct
thing
at every point and just grind, just little tiny incrementally like climbing up,
which you can do online if you have another tab open.
Well, because it's also like volume, you can play like $1 and $2 blinds, and you can have 8 tables open, and if you make, you know, 2 big blinds per hour per like table you play, then it's like you're just able to multiply it and play like 10% of hands and not get bored. But I was playing live only. I mean, I bought into some of these on. I played online a little bit, and it's just like there's nowhere legal to do it really. I mean, you can go on Bovada or whatever, but there's nowhere where I felt like my money wasn't, you know, any day I was going to wake up to an email like, sorry, you lost that $500 or whatever.
I played online poker for a while too, like All Star Poker or Poker All Stars or something. Poker Stars and Full Tilt. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those things where it's so easy to get your deposit in, but then when you're like, actually, you can only take out exact multiples of 25 over, you know, they're like, there's like all these loopholes and like, fuck, dude, you just make it. Fine, I'll just gamble it, you know, and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Oh, we don't have your money.
Yeah. Oh, there's also the one where it's like, would you want to double down on a blackjack hand? Like, you could play like blackjack, and it's just like, that's where you just like click until your money disappears.
Well, with the also with online poker, if you could play, I mean, the amount of information that those guys have about you as a player when they're playing against you, like, is really, Because they have these, if you've played 100 hands with them, then they sit there and they have like, this is the percentage of hands you've played, this is the percentage of pots you've entered without raising on the river, this is the percentage of times that you
bet.
You know, like they just have it, all the information is in the hand histories, and they just have these little
They have information you don't even have about yourself.
Yeah, they see leaks in your game that you aren't even really aware that you have a check folding range on the turn that's too big, you know, like you're just not even thinking about that.
Well, I think I just read an article today talking about dudes breaking shit. FanDuel, like, I think I read, like, they're getting, like, there's some legal issues because, like, FanDuel guys are, like, winning $500,000 on DraftKings, and DraftKings employees are using, yes, like, algorithms to win on, and I'm like, of course, that's the fucking, that's the stock market put into cargo shorts and running sneakers.
Yeah, like, the DraftKings is, I'm scared of that. It's so heavily advertised. I'm like, what's the odds in 2 years? That's just not a thing that you can legally do
it
anymore.
It feels like online poker.
Players are going nuts over it. They're like online poker players are like, DraftKings, you guys got to do it, because they're like sponsoring all this online poker stuff. So these guys are shilling so hard for it.
They're pumping so much into advertisement. I mean, yeah. Their marketing money is insane. They must just be like, we have to hit this now, because yeah, it's going to go away.
Right. Well, it's like one of those things too, where like you can't have a commercial that I see 50 times during NFL games, which you know is a big media buy. You can't have where they talk about, we're giving out $2.5 million a week. I'm like, if you're giving out $2.5 million a week, if that's a true statement, you're making at least $6 million a week.
Yeah.
That's right. Minimum. So you're like, and you're blowing all this money on advertising. It's like, they must be making fucking bank, and it's got to go past just the little fee they take from
and
people
then their
gambling.
Employees are like gambling with their like
why
knowledge
wouldn't
of
you
the...
how would you not just have like a fake account where you could just be like, I have so much inside algos.
It's
which
the first
I think
thing
I
that anyone think, would think to do.
Do you guys do either of you read Matthew Berry's fantasy football column?
No. Do you play fantasy football?
I do play fantasy football, and so he does a column, and he always has like a long intro before he gives you like his loves and hates for the week. But he must have gotten $1 billion from DraftKings, and so he just wrote this entire thing that was all about like DraftKings, a daily fantasy play, to all these loyal readers who he's had for 10 years, and he got fucking murdered for it. And then his whole next column was just like him like whining about all the mean emails that he got. Or just like, everybody hated it, like they really hated it, and okay, yes, I am a paid sponsor for it. It's like, yeah, no shit. But I think it's because it's so good. I mean, it's not even that he's a dick, it just was so funny to see him just get slaughtered for it.
So people just shit all over him for shilling for it,
just
or more
everybody
like
was tweeting at him
it.
Just like, you fucking sell out, like I've been reading you for so long, and it's just like
such a
you
bummer.
Just cashed in on like your fan base, which is just these people who play season long fantasy who don't want to hear about this DraftKings thing. And that was all he wrote about for a week. He's like, I think I found a compromise where yes, I will mention daily fantasy plays because it's a fun way to do the game. Just like, it's just so funny because it's always these long-winded intros, and it was so clear that he's just like super butthurt about it. It was really like gratifying to read.
I have like these meathead friends from the tri-state area that all work in business that I went to college with, and they're like, he was like, bro, they got guys on DraftKings using algos, there's no way you can fucking compete with these guys. And they're, I'm like, all right, what are you talking about? And he was saying like,
did he really shorten algorithms to algos?
Yeah, they say
that's good.
I've never heard that.
I'm going to say it forever. They were like, they're using algos. It's so funny to hear. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? They're like, they're building computer programs to win these drafts. Like, the way like people build computer programs to like maximize making money, buying and selling stocks and shit, which goes to show you how little I know about investing. But they're doing that shit for fucking fantasy, for daily fantasy.
Well, one thing I heard from one of the poker players I follow on Twitter was like tweeting some article about how like there's people who are playing DraftKings, like, you know, who may not work for the company or have insider knowledge, but they just are like professionals basically in how they approach it. And that for all, there's these like one-on-one things where you can like I can just square off against you all season, or maybe week to week, I don't know exactly how it works, but that the pros were just buying up one slot of all of those so that you could like, so that basically any chump who's like buying like $5 head to head, I'll go against this guy this week, you're going against
a pro who's playing against $1,000 games.
Yes, who's playing $1,000 games the exact same way.
Right.
As, you know,
with the
as
maximized because it's like, I'm going to win. If I win 400 of these.
And he's just gambling on the fact that, like, you're not a professional like he is. You're just somebody who's, and which is what you're talking about, but it's like, so you're just like, why do I want to do that?
It's such just a bummer.
Get my ass handed to me.
Such a
it's
bummer.
Like with like online gaming, whenever I would like play an Xbox game and be like, I'm getting pretty good at this. I'm going to play this UFC game online. And you just get your ass handed to you. I'm like, there's no learning curve here. There's just like people who are either quicker at this or they have a controller.
Yeah. Or they've been playing like Call of Duty. You get the game, you play it 2 hours a night. You're 1 month in, you're like, okay, I got 60 hours under my belt. I'll go on online. You go online. There's someone who's been playing 15 hours a day.
The map taped to their wall.
Right, right, exactly. Who's played only the level you're playing. They've played only that, like, the whole time. Like, those guys who, we keep saying guys, but it's a very male thing, to just break. I had a friend, like, when we played Magic the Gathering coming up, which I think is another reason why I'm into gambling, because I love D&D, I love rolling dice, I love the
And Magic the Gathering is, there's, like, a lot of crossover with poker players playing that, too, because it's such a, like, it's a very mathematical game.
It's a mathematical game, it's, like, head-to-head, and it's a lot like, what's this guy about to do? But we had a friend that played, like, Magic, and we played Star Wars, the customizable card game, for a long time. Star Wars CCG, shout out right there. I'll do another episode.
Send some free cards. Gators, what's your address?
I'll give out my address on this. It is. But I had a friend who like built a Dagobah deck when the Dagobah expansion came out, and found a way that he could just like take a point away, a hit point away from your character every round. It was like the most unfun way to do it, but like it was impossible to stop. And it was like one of those things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to play anymore. Like my friend JP, we always make fun of him. He breaks all the games. Like when we play Diablo online, he's like, I've mastered the most amount of damage per second, and you're playing with him and his character's like insanely juiced up, and you're like, this is not fun, Japers. No fun. Yeah. But to guys who like to win, that's what they want to do. And that's why online poker, DraftKings, anything, even just like playing Call of Duty online or Warcraft, that shit sketches me out because people are just too good.
Yeah. That's why I backed away from that online poker too. I was like, I'm definitely losing because I'm playing too many hands and stuff, but there's just people who are sitting playing tight to like exploit it, and I'm just losing money.
Right, there's a guy who makes like $500 a month, pays his $100 a month rent in Omaha or whatever, and just printing, you know,
fuck you, Omaha.
Take that, Omaha.
I love Omaha.
Your rent is too cheap.
I love all those poker variants. I learned so many of them.
We're talking about the city of Omaha. Like, Dom, I love it. It's like, I love all
See, that's the degenerate. Omaha doesn't mean the city.
Oh, wait. There's people who live in a place called Omaha? Fuck them. No. All I care about is Omaha.
Four cards.
So let's talk a little bit about what's everyone's favorite poker game. Because Texas Hold'em.
Okay.
No Limit Hold'em.
If we're excluding Texas Hold'em, just because.
Well, if that's your favorite, just say.
It's definitely the one I have the most experience with and would be like, I'm the best at this game than I am at any other game.
That's the skill game, right?
They all are. I mean, they really all are. I mean, probably the least one is like some.
When you add Wilds, I feel like it's
Wild
it adds
games
a big.
Are,
it adds
wild
a lot.
Games are crazy. Yeah,
it adds a lot of luck.
But I mean, yeah, that's
even
true.
More luck than just more Hold'em has, because it's like a Wild is so much more powerful of a card.
Yeah, I mean, you're still, I guess, you figuring out the math and the probability of like how many Wilds are left,
right,
and whatever.
Still
you can
even,
see some of them, and depending on the game, but. I really like, and people get very mad if you deal this game at the weekly game that we're in. I like Omaha High Low. And people don't want to play split pot games.
I like that game.
But I guess for people who don't know, like there's two winners at the end of the hand. Like the low hand wins and the high hand. So if you have like, you know, whatever, ace, two, four, five, six, then you have the low hand. And if you have 10, jack, queen, king, ace, then you have the high. So the thing that I like about it is that almost any hand you get dealt just has so many possibilities for you.
Right.
Like you're just like, God, I just see the cards and I go, there's so many ways I could win with this. and all throughout the hand, there's just like more. And so it's a bad game because you wind up like making a worse investment so often because there's so many more variants going on. That's why people get upset about split pots at that game because they just go like, we're playing a long hand where people are betting a lot of money, where at the end of it, you just pull the money back a lot of the time because if it's, I'm playing heads up against you, you have the high hand, I have the low hand.
And we're just juicing
like,
the pot up.
And we're Hollywooding it, just like a couple of cowboys like, all right, I'm all in. It's like, me too.
Call.
And then it's like, well, just pull it back because we each take half of it.
I I don't hate the sound of that. The thing I hate about Omaha High-Low is I don't fully understand the qualifier.
Until you... I lost a lot of money playing that game not knowing, like, certain aspects of it. When I just first started playing it, when all I had ever played was Hold'em, I would be like, oh, wait, I thought I had the, you know...
I thought I had the low hand because I only have a pair of deuces or whatever.
Yeah, and it's like, well, a pair makes it higher. And yeah, and so
I'm like, wait,
that killed me once or twice, but now I feel like I do understand it, and I do think it is... just fun because I feel more engaged throughout the hand more often.
Well, that's why I like the wild games. I personally like baseball because there's two wild cards. And, you know, I like that there's chances for, like, crazy things to happen. Like,
yeah, but if you don't get a wild within your first, like, four cards, you're just out.
Right. But I also like that about it because it, I know when not to chase. I chase all too often in Hold'em.
Yeah.
I'll chase because I'm like, I could, if I have three outs, there's a chance because I like to gamble. When you play baseball, it's like, I don't have any wild cards yet. I know I have to fold. It's like, there's no way I might beat that guy. Like, Luis has two threes. There's no way I can beat that.
Yeah.
The thing I don't like about baseball is that it's always two massive hands running into each other. Like, a lot of the other poker games, there can be, like, bluffing spots and stuff.
Oh, right.
And you can bluff in baseball, and you see it sometimes, but it's really much more about, like, I feel like, making your four of a kind.
It winds up being who has the best hand.
If you don't, then you should fold. And it's, you know, it's a stud game, so you can see everyone's board.
Right, right. And it's like, it's sort of hard to outbluff someone when you have four kings. You're like,
yeah, you just go like, you could have
having the second best hand in baseball completely screws you.
Yes, yeah.
Where, like, there's, and I mean, I guess that's true in Hold'em, I guess. But in all of you have the second best hand, but it's only a pair of fours or whatever, and the other guy has a straight, then it's very easy to throw away. But if you have four kings and the other person has four aces, then it's like, you can never fold it, even if you're like, shit, I guess.
Four kings is a TF.
Yeah.
That is a tight fold.
So, yeah, that's just like, it's easy to get totally screwed. But, like, I guess, yeah, when I play Omaha, almost any hand I get dealt, when I look at my cards, I don't have that feeling you get when you get dealt, like, a 3-9 and Hold'em.
Yeah.
You pick up your cards and you go, like, well, fuck me, better luck next time, and you just throw it away.
Right.
And you just watch people play for a while.
Yeah.
At least in the very first moment, even if I don't wind up, like, being able to play the hand effectively,
right,
I still just go, like, all right, maybe.
Because a shit hand is also maybe
yeah,
a good
you go
hand.
Like, well, yeah, maybe I'll make a low.
Yeah, and then but then you that's when you get like the 2-4s and you're like, well, this is neither.
Yeah.
Like, this sucks. I have that my hand is so it's shitty, but not shitty enough to be winning shitty.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess Hold'em's my favorite game just because I've played it. Like, there's the most spots that I understand in it. But I really like the draw games, like Deuce to Seven or like the low draw games. Like, Raz is fun to me.
Which one is that?
Raz is where Ace to Five is the best hand, and it's a stud game, and you're trying to make the low hand.
Oh,
and
okay.
So, you know, Ace, Deuce, 3-4-5 is the best hand, and then Ace, Deuce, 3-4-6 is the next best hand, and so on.
Oh, okay, cool. I see what you're saying, just lowest numerical hand. Yeah.
I love the way the poker night we play in is structured, where it is Hold'em, and you play the right way for the first, like, 3 or 4 hours or whatever, and then it becomes wild games. So, like, right when you're kind of like bored, or you can either go home,
yeah,
or if you want to gamble, you can stay and play crazy wild games, and it just becomes wild games, and they play like Follow the Queen and all these other games that just
I love that we get both out of. I love that we get both out of this.
It's really
game.
Nice.
It's so much fun that because then it's like just when you're getting bored of Hold'em, or even if you lost like $90 or $150 or two more playing Hold'em, you're like, I could probably win 100 back playing these crazy ass fucking games.
I can make it all back in one hand if I get dealt 2 queens and Follow the Queen.
Right, like, exactly. Yeah. And I like that. And everyone's a little looser just from time and the style of games.
Everyone's very, very fucked up. And
when everyone's
night,
tired,
everyone's
drunk,
like,
or stoned, all of a sudden it's like, let's change the rules of everything.
Yeah.
Up the stakes.
That's good. And that home game also stops me from ever going to Commerce or one of the other like local casinos. Not ever, but there was a period where I was going often to play cards at these card rooms, which gets pretty depressing.
It's not the best environment. That's my major issue
tough.
With casinos. I'm a diehard. Like, I went to Atlantic City all the time when I lived in New York, and I go to Vegas as often as I can living here in Los Angeles, I love, the hardest part about gambling is being in a casino or the other people that are in casinos.
Yeah.
I've numbed myself to it.
Yeah, you can just handle like a sitting next just, to a disgusting fucking
guy in
jean shorts.
I mean, if it's like gross, yeah, you know, I would be grossed out. But right. I mean, the guy who like falls asleep at the table doesn't bump me out anymore. As much as he used to.
like but, dudes.
Or the dude who you watched cash's welfare check in at the window just now.
That
and
guy.
Then
that
is,
guy.
And then is out. Like yeah. putting it all on one hand, at Hollywood Park. Like you're like,
yeah,
this sucks.
It's upsetting to be around after a while. I understand. And the need for like high table limits, like not that I could ever fuck around at like a $50 minimum craps table or something like that, or a $100 minimum blackjack, but I understand why they exist now. That's the last guy you want to sit next to if you're putting fucking hundreds of dollars down. You don't want to like see the guy that's like fucking putting his whole life on the line.
Well,
like,
that's why I started playing tournaments more. Like I stopped going down to the casinos just to play cash games unless I just had a few hours to kill or for some random night or something.
I love that. Exactly. I stopped drinking completely, except like if it was nighttime and nobody was around, I would have like,
well, because with cash games I never knew when to stand up. I would like go and I would be up or down or whatever, and
right
then,
and you're like, you could always put another 2 hours in. You're like, maybe
yeah
I'll
and I'd always be like, what do I think is gonna happen? All right, I'll just keep staying, I'm up $300, and then you lose it. I mean, I would do that all the time.
Yeah, or
and,
even and if you win $100 more, you're like, I've just been at a casino for 3 hours longer.
Yeah.
I'm only up $100.
And so I started playing tournaments because I did want to play a lot of hands, but I also didn't want to like either lose a lot of money or know when to, like in tournaments, you know when to leave because you either busted out of the tournament or you won the tournament.
Right. Well, I like tournaments too. I've only played in like one or two. One at a casino, several like at like charity or table game, like, oh, we're doing a big tournament. I like tournaments too because it's like, it's bummer to lose, but you do get to leave. Like, that's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yes. I don't like them as much, or I don't like doing the ones at the casinos out here as much because they trap me. Where I go, like, if I go to this thing at 6 o'clock, the best case scenario for me is that I'm still here at 1 a.m.
Right. Like,
and I go, like, I don't know that I want to be or that I will want to be at that time. And so I'm much more hesitant. Like, I have to, like, really know that my night is open. I have nothing the next day.
Right.
And then it's fun.
Right. Because in a positive situation, when you're winning, you're sitting at that table for 8 hours.
Yes, yeah. You're there forever.
Yes, when I was single, like, I was going there all the time. And not, it's so much better to not be go. I was going too much. And right. But playing tournaments, I was like, my chance of losing, it's a $100 buy-in tournament. My chances of losing more than $100 are none unless
right.
I stick around.
Right.
But
right.
I would always be so sick of playing poker after playing for 6 hours.
Yeah, like, and if you bust out of a tournament that's not, like, at a friend's house, you're like, okay, the silver lining is I'm getting in my fucking car and getting out of, I don't have
oh,
to
yeah,
be
oh yeah, because if I go sit down to cash game, there's no chance I play good after busting out of a tournament like late in the day.
Right,
if
right.
I bust out early, I just want to see more hands and play, I might do it. But.
Right. But if you bust out late, you're like, now you're playing with like a vengeance or something like that.
And also I was like so impatient. I wanted to play more hands. Like I just didn't want, and in a tournament, you can like, there's like styles you can develop that don't, that where you can play more hands profitably. But in a cash game, if you play a lot of hands, in the long run,
you're
if someone's just sitting there playing their top 10% of hands, they'll
you're
beat
gonna,
you.
Yeah, if you're playing at a table with nine other guys who are playing their 10, if you're playing with nine other guys who are all playing their 10% hands, and you're playing, the more hands you play, the worse you do.
But in a tournament, if you're waiting for the top 10% of hands, you're going to run out of time because
right,
you're going
right.
to blind off because the blinds go up. So you have to play more.
You have to chase something.
So you just
simple.
Have to be more aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, what is it called that you do when you're real aggressive before the flop comes out?
Oh, when I just re-raise before the flop?
Yeah. Is that called like
pre-flop raise?
Pre-flop raise or blind stealing or something like?
Oh, stealing blinds.
Stealing blinds.
Yeah.
That is that help more in a tournament when the blinds go up? You can like
that
steal.
Really doesn't matter in a cash game as much. I mean, it matters a little bit, I guess, if you're just trying to annoy people. But in a tournament, yeah, you might be in a situation where stealing the blinds increases your chip stack by like 20%.
Right.
Just for raising with any two cards because it's folded around to you and you're on the dealer button or something.
Oh, yeah, because of all right, so. I know we're jumping around a lot here, but table position is something that never even registered as important until I started playing.
It's like the
weekend.
First thing that all the poker books, like if you like read whatever Super System,
Helmuth,
which was like
whatever.
Doyle Brunson's big poker book, it's all about like just punishing people in position, like just playing pots in position because you're the last to act. You have all the information and you can bluff people more easily.
So you know, like, what everyone's willing to bet because you've seen what they all put out. You know who's in.
Yeah, and you can also decide not to bluff. You have all you have more information than anyone's going to have to make a decision if you're on the dealer button.
So is that's the spot you want to be?
Yes. It's position-wise, post-flop, it's the best spot to be because it's always going to you're always going to be the last to act on each street of betting.
Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah. And that's why it's important.
The later in the rotation, like the later you get to act, then the more freedom you have to like play different kinds of hands. Like yeah. If you're gonna, you know,
because you could put out, you could if you play early and then everyone else re-raises you, you're like, fuck, I guess they have strong hands. But if you're last and you see two people re-raise, you could assume that they have strong hands.
Well, you could also
that's like I'm very much simplifying.
You can also think about it like this: if you're raising from first position and there's nine other players in the game, and even if they're all very tight and all playing the top 10% of hands, you know, or only 10% of the time will they get a premium hand to play with you, there's a 90% chance that will happen because there's nine people who are all taking that. So you are almost certain to run. Like if you're raising an early position without a good hand, then there's no real reason to do it because you're always going to get called by bigger hands.
Right.
Or very often you're going to get called by bigger hands.
It's also that feeling when like just nobody's betting and like three cards have come down and every time it comes around to you and there's no one behind you, you're like, I guess I just put some money in because it seems like they're just going to give it to me.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They're just either going to fold or someone is just waiting.
Or they've been hiding and then that's when you find them.
Yeah. And then they call and you're like, oh, okay.
Okay,
yeah,
he's got it. All right.
Like if there's three people in the pot or something, if like someone raises and then there's like two callers and you're one of them and you're like, you're the last to act and then the flop comes down and they both check, you can kind of bet with whatever you have because they probably,
you're assuming they didn't make something,
especially if someone raised and then checked on a flop. A lot of times that means they missed and are already giving up on a hand or something, you know.
Oh, see, maybe the main reason I wanted to have this podcast was to just pick your brains about poker without under the auspices of like, yeah, we can plug whatever you guys want, put your Twitter handles up there, fine. But I have like 50 questions because I need to start winning.
Oh god, you want this is a coaching session.
Yeah.
Like a poker coaching. I don't feel qualified.
Trust me, you've seen me play. I could use any bit of information. So see, that's, I don't know what other people's actions mean beyond the base level of like, he's raising, he has something good, or he wants me to think he has something good, or he wants me to think that I think he has something good.
Well, see, that's where you're so polarized in your mind there. No, I think that the thing, every poker book I read was like the first thing was like always that you have to like play in position and you just have to like remember other hands you've played with specific players. And I was always like, I'm not gonna remember that. Just like when it was like, know how much money's in the pot always. I was like, I'm never gonna add up the pot in every suit. But then it's like, you just get used to it. If you're just actually following the action a lot, you just get used to adding up the math.
Because like, I've noticed that a lot where people are like, bet the pot or like, I'm calling. And they're like, how much is in there? And like four people at the table are like, $34. I'm like, wait a minute. Am I the only one? Am I doing something wrong? But if everyone's like, yeah, it's 34. Actually, no, that's 33. It's like, and then everyone lines it up and it's like 33. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm sitting here going, I don't know, six? Like I'm throwing out money and I'm realizing like I'm sitting at like swimming.
But you're also playing in a game too. Like if you watch people playing against each other, like a lot of us have played a lot of hands with each other too. Like I played more hands with Sean than probably anybody else in my life.
Right.
And then like everyone else too, like we've played enough games together that like you can really be like, well, two games ago you were doing this type of thing with this type of hand. I feel like you're probably doing the same thing here, you know, like you can kind of piece it together. But when someone's really new to a table and you're like, it's weird to watch if you're at a table of good players and someone sits down and they're new, a lot of people will like, they'll tighten up because you want to see how this person plays.
Yeah, you don't know. They're like, when we're sitting at a table, it's like, oh, Dom, I know you're just big dogging us and I know what you're going. I've seen you do this move before. It's got to be what you're doing again. Or like, Sean, you're being way too chill. It's got to be. That's not a good.
Sean, you're being chill. What
I'm just
mean?
Too chill. Hey, I'm a chill guy. Don't read into it, John.
Sean's always chill when he has a big hand.
Yeah, could you imagine seeing Sean
I'm
excited?
So chilled out.
Imagine Sean trying to
how
suppress
much was the bet, Sean?
Excitement.
Sean's like,
I couldn't even imagine Sean trying to act like trying to not to be excited in a situation would be such a funny.
That was like the other thing that I just started like trying to like look into more is like physical tells and stuff, because it's like something that I feel like when I was playing in certain tournaments, I feel like there's certain situations where people made decisions that must have been based off of a like physical read or like timing tell, like how long I took to bed or something. And so I've started to like pay attention more to like what I'm giving off.
Oh, so you're not maybe not picking up on other people's tells, but you're being more self-aware about your tells.
It's just being observant and noticing when, like, it's more about trying to do it the same way every time, every decision, trying to take a similar amount of time to think.
If you watch the final table, like at the main event, like you'll see the pros, a lot of them have a ritual with which they put out their chips. And so they'll do like three things before they put out chips for a bet so that they never do it too fast or too slow. It's like, I make a stack here, I move it over here, I put my hands at my side, and then I put the chips in. And so it's just so that, like,
so that anytime-
it's mechanical, and you can't ever be like, well, why did he, like, shove him in right away? Like, or why did he, like, so long before he made his
bet? It's not worth doing reverse tells where I'm, like, putting it in there super strong to make you think I'm weak, or because then you'll either figure it out or you might just take it at face value. Like, it's hard for me to know how you'll interpret it.
Right,
but if I do something the same way every time, and that's why they wear sunglasses and hat. There's just, because there's like, I mean, there's people who do, there's like tells about your like carotid artery, like,
right, like you
going
like,
crazy. So that's why dudes wear collars up and shit like that. And no one's touching
because it's
face
hard. It's hard when there's a lot of money in a pot, even in like a friendly house game. It's hard when there's a lot of money in a pot. I can notice myself when I have like a very good hand and someone's betting into me. I notice like when I go to grab my chips, I'm like, whoa, my hand is moving way more than I ever thought it would. It's like a little shaky. And then I'm like, okay, you know, like, and I'm like, I don't even care that much, but your body can just...
Even just how long it wait, you wait to like, if it's like the action's on you and you immediately check, that says a lot more about your hand than if you take 4 seconds and
then
check.
Right, right,
because then it's like, okay, he didn't have much of a decision to make. He just checked immediately. So that means he's probably not super strong, you know, or is probably what, you know.
Which is like when that always happens at the flop when some like five guys quick check, we're just like, all right, yeah, we just want to see one more. Everyone just wants to see one more card. Let's just don't be a dick.
Yeah.
And then that's where Dom goes, 10. And everyone's like, fine, I'm out. The fucking Johnny Blind Thief over there.
Yeah. It's if I'm paying attention, I'm doing it the same way every time. But I don't in that home game because I don't care. But if I'm doing a tournament where like there was just a couple of decisions that people made against me that I was like, I think that I was giving something off.
Yeah, it'd be weird if you were like trying to get tells on people in the home game. Like it would be.
Well, it's just like it's never a specific one-to-one thing. It's just like how comfortable are you? Like, and there's like ways that people purse their lips and shit that mean different levels of satisfaction. And it's really. Like, I guess there could be a chance where, like, some people claim to have big. Oh, there was one in Vegas. We convinced a guy that I had a tell on him.
Oh, that was amazing.
You guys at Sean's match, you guys were telling
me
about
this.
We
played poker at the, it was at the MGM Grand, right? Or no, the Mandalay Bay, rather.
Yeah, Mandalay Bay.
It was
Bay,
at the Mandalay Bay, which was a really depressing poker corner. And it was late at night.
Yeah.
And I think it was like my idea and it was so depressing. And I was glad that Sean won money in that game because otherwise it was miserable for everybody. Like not otherwise it would have been, but otherwise it was like everyone lost money there. I was there till like 4 a.m.
It wasn't the best situation to gamble in. Yeah, yeah.
No, but this guy was like sitting down at the table, very kind of bro-y, chatty, like table captain type guy and was talking strategy and certain. So like he wanted to kind of give off this knowledge of poker.
Ugh.
And he was like, great, you know, he seemed to kind of know what he was doing. He wasn't playing super bad, but he was like getting frustrated when his hands didn't hit or whatever. And there was one hand against me where it doesn't really matter the action, I guess, but I bet out on one street and then he called and then I was done with the hand because I just had absolutely nothing. So and then the river came and he looked at it for a second and then he put out a bet. And then I just immediately folded, and I said, nah, man, I can't do it. No, you're too strong or whatever. Just
well, it was actually, it was like there had been two eights out.
That's right. The
and
eight
and
that's
so
right.
And so the eight paired, and like the guy called him, and the guy bet, and he was like, I can't get you to play. And Dom goes, no, man, you have an eight. And the guy got shook to his core.
Uh-huh.
He was like, how does he know I have it? And just like, and he just was like, huh, really? Yeah, you got a tell on me? And just started wigging out. And then as we like played a couple more hands and then Dom made like another good fold against him. And then he just started being like, what is it, man? I mean, what's
offering you money, right?
Yeah.
And then at a certain point in the night, he goes, like, he was like, hey man, I'm going to leave in a couple hands. I'll give you $20 to tell me what the tell is you have on me. And I didn't have anything, and I should have made something up, but I just didn't. Like, the cooler version of me, I'm just like, dude, your fucking eye goes crazy. Or yeah. some, just put him in his head about some
So
weird
did you
behavior.
Tell him I'm not telling you, or did you say I'm just
fucking. I said I was messing. I was yeah, kidding. Yeah. I mean, I guess I called his hand because right? he had trip eights. I didn't. I definitely wasn't. But I was folding because I had nothing. If I had had an actual decision, if I had had a two-pair hand, I would have called.
Right. But in reality, you seeing those eights on the board and then seeing someone excited to bet, if you can tell that they're excited, you could assume that they just tripped up, right?
I mean, I
that
can
tripled up.
Yeah, I mean, on that on it's a board a, like that,
yeah.
if he was pretty much seemed content to like check call all streets, and then when people get suddenly excited on the river,
right.
it's pretty polarizing.
It's pretty
like
obvious.
It either means, well, people sometimes will make it to the river with absolutely nothing and then go, oh, shit. I have to if I, I have to bet the full pot to win or something.
Right, like I chased something, didn't get it. Now I'm here at the end. This other guy maybe has something. I got to scare him away.
So in my experience, when people bomb the river, it's or they made their full house yeah, or something. Right, so yeah. it's like it's either a bluff or it's a strong made hand.
Right, right. All right. So let's talk a little bit about because we just kind of said that the Mandalay Bay room is a little sketchy. So let's get a little bit for like proper advice if we. If you were recommending someone to go play poker, like where's your, where, like, I'll just say instead of recommending, where's your favorite poker room? What's your favorite?
Are you talking about in Los Angeles?
I guess let's say Los Angeles or Las Vegas if you have a room.
I mean, the Vegas poker rooms are nicer.
Which casino do you like to play the most at in Vegas, I guess is what
the
I'm
Aria
talking.
And Bellagio are the two that I've played cards at. The Bellagio I've played at more.
Is
I
it
guess.
Because they're just two of the nicer casinos in general?
Well, they cater to poker too. Like a lot of the casinos have their poker room be like three tables, four tables in a corner.
That
Bellagio
looks
and Aria.
Like, it looks like a diner from outside. You know, like there's like yeah. the open window on the
it's
side.
Like who wants to play poker with this old man? And you know,
it's like a dark back room, and there's also some of them where there's only like two tables, and you get the sense that everyone knows each other. And oh. like
yeah, they're all Vegas locals.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, you sit down, they're just gonna take my money. They're not gonna take it from each
yeah,
other.
When yeah, when I played it, the Hard Rock like a couple months ago, and it was like there's only like two tables, and every single person knew everyone else, and they all knew the whole staff, and it was just like, oh, okay,
they're gonna just
like,
take money from the 10th guy
yeah,
that sits
just
down.
Do this all day, you know, like yeah. And but the Bellagio is very nice. It's very comfy.
Yeah, comfy chairs. Like it's well, because those are the high stakes room. Like there and the Aria where the big games happen, and so they have all different stakes.
Like there's
so,
one
like,
two
that's what
all
I like
the way
to.
Up to like
yeah they have one two they have a, like a 3-5 game I think they have, I'm sure they have like a 10-20 game and
we
a
saw
game.
Gus Hansen there
yeah we saw Gus Hansen there who's a
there's like a room right. inside
he's
the room
face Chinese on a table
yeah this dude who's like a huge like crazy gambler poker player was just in there playing on some
like
random
a brilliant,
Friday
like,
night
world class backgammon and like poker players won a bunch of tournaments and yeah he was just in there playing we walked
playing
by
playing open face Chinese
he's playing open that's like a big game all these poker pros are playing now which is open face Chinese poker which is like it's just a game where you play a certain amount per point. And then you, do you know Chinese at all? It's kind of hard
the
to
language
explain.
Or the
but you get,
poker
do you,
stuff.
I'm going to explain this game to you in Chinese. Do you know Chinese?
Such a, Tom just speaks fluent Mandarin for like 5 minutes at the tail end of this podcast. We have no idea what's going on. We're like, okay, so ding ha, see da. I'm like, what?
Well, I was just about to say, Dom, why don't you speak some Chinese right now? I'm sure it won't sound racist if you continue the bit. But Gabrus was way out in front
meal.
Of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, don't worry. I'm diving in front of racist bullets for my friends on a daily basis.
No, but you get
you need you, someone to say big nose Jew joke. Here comes Uncle Gabrus.
But so I mean, it's kind of a complicated game to explain. But Chinese is basically a game where you get 13 cards, and then they're dealt face up in front of you one at a time, and you're trying to make three different hands. You're trying to make a 3-card hand, a 5-card hand, and a 5-card hand. And you're supposed to order them. Your 3-card hand is supposed to be your worst hand. Then your second 5-card hand is your second strongest. And then your 5-card hand in the back is your strongest hand. And then the person you're playing against, you compare hands and like certain, like a straight is worth a certain amount of points. A flush is worth a certain amount of points. And you play for X amount of dollars a point. And then you just keep dealing hands until the end of the night, until you're done playing.
There's also a variation too where like you make your worst hand. And you're like you make one hand your worst 5-card hand, and then you make your best 3-card hand your best 5-card hand.
Okay, yes, yeah. That's just maybe regular Chinese.
Yes, that's not open face Chinese.
Yes, that's
it
right.
gets dealt yeah. to you.
But they're
down.
The same fundamental game, just two different variants of it. But it's so he's just playing that a game that the casino doesn't deal unless you're like we're gonna play for $10,000 a point and you can sit out or whatever they were doing, whatever nonsense.
And you could just take whatever monster rake you're gonna.
Yeah,
make
they're gonna
that,
take yeah. some rake and yeah, I'll just deal Chinese to you guys.
That just reminds me. I just read this like. Not too long ago, I read an article about some guy these like super high end gamblers, like super whales that can get the casino to change the rules of blackjack.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's like
people negotiate that. Like the high end blackjack players, they just they don't like, go and sit down at a table. They go like, all right, here's I'll play blackjack if you allow me.
Yeah,
this.
I'm going to buy in for $200,000. I'll play $10,000 hands.
Yes.
But I need 21 pushes. Like, you know, it's like dealer must hit on a seven. Like they can yeah. like edge like the things a little bit in their favor. And then those guys can just minimize their like I was like, that's the most accurate representation of like the rich just keep getting richer.
You
like you could be so rich that you change the like you could tell a casino to go. Hey, make it easier for me to win.
what's the deal with blackjack paying 6 to 5 now?
That is such.
They were
are they
making
not
enough
making
money.
Enough money. Exactly. Yeah. That drives me.
Who was eating into their blackjack profit? Like, how was that working?
The 3 to 2 was killing them. It's like the only fun thing is you hit blackjack and they just pay you out and then they give you like 2 ones.
Yeah, and then you get like that silver dollar on the
I'm
top.
Like,
it's
like the tip. Fuck me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm gonna just give this back to you. Or I'm gonna give it to the waitress. I hate that shit. And as much as I like to play the blackjack that has like the little weird kicker, that.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to find a table that doesn't have a weird kicker anymore.
Yeah, they're all
that
Switch
doesn't have like a
something.
Dollar for pairs
the
or
perfect
dollar.
Pairs.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
yeah.
my favorite. The one in New Zealand.
Oh, gotta love it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were talking about the guy negotiating his blackjack terms, do you know about Phil Ivey, who's like this big famous poker player?
Right. Oh, he was maybe one of the dudes name dropped in it because he does.
Well, here's what his thing was. He went to a London casino and gambled baccarat, and he was like doing it super high stakes, and he negotiated terms. He goes, "I want I believe it was Chinese dealer." And he goes, and I want my girlfriend, who's, I believe, also Chinese, to be there with me. I think that's good luck. And and you have to use these decks, these types of decks that you already kind of use in your casino. And so that's what it, and so basically when this woman would deal, she was being like his girlfriend was telling her to like turn, like she was turning the cards. There's some way in which he could see by the edges of the cards. Phil Ivey apparently has like eyes, like he can see imperfections in cards.
Right. He has
and
like
so
fucking Sherlock
he's
Holmes.
Just,
vision.
That's just something yeah. he can do with his eyes and mind and focus. And he's like, saw that if he could see what the edges were going to be. So he knew sometimes what the next card was going to be or whether or not the deck was hot or cold. I don't really know how to play that game.
Those are like the two casino games I don't know is Baccarat and Pi.
And he won like $7 million and they found out about it that it's called edge sorting is the name of the thing. If you look up Phil Ivey edge sorting, that's what it is. And it's and so they sued him and he basically went to court with the argument of, yes, that's what I did, but these are terms I negotiated with them. Like they were agreed to deal it this specific way that I wanted, that I said was lucky, that was giving me an advantage over them.
It's truly
but they
lucky.
Didn't know it. Yeah. He's like, they do this to everybody on every day. Like give them
it's
an
so it's hard like, to be on the casino side when anybody wins, even like anytime you hear about yeah. somebody like, you know, the cleaning up at blackjack, card counting and having a system for that, it's like, yeah, but they're still just like playing with your cards in your house.
Right,
like,
right. And it's like, yeah. there's enough people not doing it.
They
that.
Didn't bring an outside element to the game. They right. just understood it in a way that they could
like,
profit.
Because it's like, because card counting isn't technically illegal. They can
no,
just,
they just
like
we don't want your
yeah, they just out. Throw you out. They're like, you know, you can't
I tried
come
to
in
learn
here.
Card counting.
You did?
I downloaded an app.
I was just about to say, Dom, I can't believe you don't.
No.
And I actually might believe that you do and you say you don't so that you could use that somehow in poker.
No, I downloaded the app and I spent like a weekend like playing with it to learn it. And I was just like, I gave up. I mean, I could probably memorize it, but then it's also like you have to be sitting at the table counting cards, but not making it look like you're counting cards. And then you also have to learn the betting systems to like,
right? You have to, and, like, but even then, it's just betting when the deck is hotter. And then
yes.
they have ways to beat that now too, because then you like sit down, and you're
shuffle
like, oh wait,
machines.
This is only double deck, or this is shuffle machine. There's like all kinds of weird things, and you're like,
I was
oh,
like, I just don't, there's no, I don't know why I'm trying to learn how to beat blackjack. I don't think I can beat it.
Right, right, right. It seems not worth it. It seems
yes.
like just keep getting better at poker. Like that's what I play craps, and there's like no way you can like really. It's just a matter of like, I hope my number comes up. Like
yeah, roulette. I like to play roulette, and that is.
the same thing where it's like, that's just totally like, there's a little bit of systems and how to hedge your bets with where you place your chips.
But
basically you're like,
but not one that beats roulette.
Right. Like I have a crap system that works when they're not hitting sevens. Yeah. like my crap system is nearly foolproof if they're not hitting sevens. But
I think I have a system that I get to stick around for a while on one chunk of money. And then if I hit my area or number, I hit pretty good.
Yeah.
But then otherwise I'm just losing.
Right. But that's what you're describing is just like that's like
hedging your bets.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What Sean was talking about.
Right,
right. Yeah. It's not.
People are always like, I got this great blackjack system. It's like, what is it? It's like, I split eights. If the deal is showing a five, I always stay. You're like, oh, you're just describing strategy.
You buy the card at the airport?
Yeah. I like though, sometimes I was at the SLS and I was pretty wasted and I was like, what should I do? And the dealer's like,
yeah.
The dealer's like,
they'll tell you.
They're not gonna lie. They're like,
that's what's so funny is when I didn't understand that the first time I gambled, I can't believe I brought this up, was the first time I played poker was in Vegas when we worked on the Video Game Awards.
No way.
And
was that your
Spike.
First? That wasn't your first time in a casino though, right?
Yeah, yeah. First time in stepping. I mean, no, I walked through a casino in Tunica because I did a show there, but I never spent any time.
Dom saw me at my degenerate 7 a.m. Through the night.
My experience was and we had talked about how earlier in the day, the worst is when I'm going to the ATM at 4 a.m. and I know I'm doing it, but I'm like, well, this is just what I. And so anyway, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. I was really drunk and I was down. I had just played blackjack and I was up and down. I don't remember if I won that night, but I was I'm going to walk back. And so I start walking back and I see you literally walking to the ATM and I was like, Gabrus, and you turn and just half acknowledge me. And then I was like, hey dude, I'm walking back. And you're like, all right, man, see you later, see you tomorrow, whatever. And I was like, do you want to walk back? It's it's 5 in the morning. You're like, no, man, I'm good. And I was like, you sure? And you were like, yeah, man. You're pushing this. And then I was like, all right.
Yeah,
and I
you
just
saw me
back.
In the shame of look, I just go to bed. One time I was in Bahamas and I was playing craps and I was on a heater and I was having fun. And Eric Scott was there, a mutual friend.
Sure.
A mutual person we know. And I've hung out with him a few times, but he was in the Bahamas at the same time as me. We hung out for 5 nights in a row. And he's a drinker and a gambler. So we had a absolute riot together. My mom comes down to go get breakfast. She's like, Jonathan, and I'm just standing at the table drinking double Jameson on the rocks with Eric, and we're rolling dice and screaming, and my mom's like, Jonathan, I'm like, Mom, what are you doing up? She's like, I'm going to breakfast. And then Eric's like, fuck, I have to play golf with his dad that day. It's like both of us were like, no, we're fucked right now. And it just happens so easily. You're like, all right, one more hour.
That's brutal. That's really brutal.
Yeah. And I didn't win, unfortunately, on that run. Guys, we should wrap this up pretty soon. Although I can talk about gambling all day. When we get off mic, I'm going to ask even more poker strategy.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm going to go into a poker training montage that's the most not fit for film training montage. I'm just like, okay. Position. Uh-huh.
The position?
Doesn't cut together that exciting.
You should learn some of the math.
Yeah.
Or this is going to be just me, you, and Sean are going to play three-handed, and you're just going to lose $100 and get mad.
Yeah. I'll be like, got it. Now I know.
Gabrus, do you have any tips for people on how to talk to dealers at table games? I feel like you always have a good rapport with
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this could just be a helpful, because I had heard about you at casinos. I think even when I lived in New York, that you were just a real force at those places, and now and then I saw it when we were all in Vegas together that you just really seem to make friends with the staff very easily.
I talk to the dealers the same way I talk to my friends, which is sort of dismissive and cutting, but out of love. And I just, if I'm going to lose $500 to a dealer, I'm going to fucking tear a new one when it comes down. But I'm not mean. I'm just I think the woman's I'm going to go on break now. I'm like, well, enjoy staring at a fucking wall in the back room for 15 minutes. And everyone's like, whoa. I was like, yeah, you're right. That was rude. My childhood best friend is this dude, Sanford, and he's a big-time gambler, too. And we roll CeeLo, and we're obnoxious when we roll CeeLo. We're like, motherfucker, get out of this game. You got nothing. And then we went to Trump Marina together with my parents, and we went on a heater on the roulette table. We weren't even playing craps yet at this point. We went on here, and we just acted like we thought you were supposed, like we acted like gangsters would act, betting thousands of dollars, but we had like no more than $30 out there on a spin. We're like, got the dirty does, bet on the does, let's go, let me see that black. For once in our life, can you spin the fucking wheel and get a black for us, baby? You know, we're just like two 23-year-old kids talking like a 50-year-old Korean woman, like, listen, mama, if you don't hit a fucking 10 soon, Papa's going to bed, you know, just like being the most. And it started when I was like 22, and now I just act that same fucking way all the way through. I think it just makes for more excitement for me too. I just kind of like,
it's
like
more fun. Like it's more fun for me to be at the table with you. I was just in Vegas without you, and I just really felt your absence. When I'm just sort of talking to you, going like, I hope I get a six. Nah.
Me and Joey Spellman, we ran the craps table at. Oh, so going back real quick to saying, like, the thing that sucks most about gambling is being in a casino. That's why I love poolside craps tables.
Mm-hmm.
It gets you some fresh air, gets you outside sometimes, and you could be in flip flops and a tank top and just rolling dice. And then the rules are even looser during the day if you're drinking like a Miller Lite tall boy in a tank top. And me and Joey went on a run, and we were like, he had like a Yankees t-shirt on, I had like a cutoff tank top. We just looked like the most fucking Long Island douches ever. And we had we were like, Giambi! We just yelled like Yankees specifics and like Italian names. We were like, super sot, like rolling the dice. And he was literally laughing so hard that he was like hiccuping, and I got like worried that I thought I was gonna watch him like fucking Belushi right in front of me. I was like, hey, let's put your drink down, Joe, let's hang out for a little bit.
God.
So that's my advice. I'll do a whole other podcast about how to treat
dealer
people
etiquette.
That please do. I could use some help.
Well, you saw how I started talking to people at the table game on my first week there. I didn't even know anybody.
That's true.
I was like, sit the fuck down, Luis.
Luis can handle it.
Yeah, he's the best. He's good at that. So Dom and Sean, anything you guys want to plug here?
I'm on Twitter at Dominic Durkis. So give that. I also Sean, I write for The Grinder.
Check out The Grinder with Rob
Tuesday
Lowe
at 8:30.
Please watch that show.
I watched the first two episodes. I find it very funny, and there should be a new one on. Is the third one come out yet?
Third one's next Tuesday.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have no idea when this episode's coming out.
We're doing them once a week.
Once a week, every Tuesday.
Oh, you're doing the once a week thing?
Yeah, that's with smart. With this show, we're trying it, and then. I guess I'm at Sean Clements on Twitter, but more importantly, please, podcast fans, listen to Hollywood Handbook. John's been on it a couple times.
Guys,
Dom's been on it a couple times.
Great show, worth it. Yeah.
His co-host Hayes, we know as well.
Hayes is another poker player as well. If
you're
into this,
yes,
for the
Hayes
poker
is
reasons.
Good.
Yeah, definitely check out Hollywood Handbook. Watch The Grinder. Follow these guys on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at John Gabris with no H's. In no H in John or in Gabris. If you don't know that at this
Gabris
point,
without an H.
There's no H's in any of our.
I don't know if I've
our,
seen that.
There's no H's in any of our names.
Yeah, you can just
oh,
go
yeah,
ahead and put
Sean
that out.
That's good.
No
That's
H.
Sean
yeah.
with no H, yeah. High and Mighty has a couple of H's, just so you're not stressed about that. Thanks to Spreaker for hosting. Thanks to
Three
our sponsors. Name drop. Thanks to our sponsors for sponsoring. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to HeadGum. Thanks to all this shit. And come in next Thursday for another new episode of High and Mighty. Thank you, shitheads. High and Mighty.
That was a HeadGum podcast.